guys. Welcome to Better Bachelor. This is Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. You know, one of my videos recently about a woman leaving her husband while he was at his all-time low hit about 400,000 views, and I think that's great. But it's kind of a fun story, and it's kind of interesting, but it seems the more serious issues I put out aren't quite as exciting. I wish they were, because I wish a video like I'm going to record today would get that many views, because this is really the whole reason that I kind of get excited about doing videos on my channel, is that there are some serious problems out there, and they're getting tightened, and it's about our freedoms, and it's about our liberty, and it's about our ability to share thoughts and ideas, whether it's on YouTube or Google or Facebook or Instagram or even offline, even in books today. And I wanted to share a few thoughts on this, because being a smart, wise man is important. And even if you're overseas, now a lot of the quotes I'm going to be using are American, but we have the First Amendment, which gives us the freedom of speech. We're one of the very few countries that can still say whatever you want about whenever you want, and we have the legal right to do so. And a lot of our companies, such as Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Google and Instagram, the list goes on and on and on. They're all American companies. And so as these American companies start making certain speech illegal, people in other countries are affected by this as well. Now, maybe they have filters where if you're in the UK or in, I don't know, Thailand, there are certain things that you can't say based on your local governance. But from America, if everything, you can say anything in America, and from there it gets filtered down. Well, if America gets filtered down, then you don't have a choice in what comes out. And this is worrying, because this is really the main way that we share our thoughts and ideas. But what if movies continue to get edited down? What if books continue to get edited down? What if your ability to speak your mind? I've got some really interesting stories that I wanted to point out today, because I think being a smart, wise person and knowing what's going on in the government, in politics, and not so much one political group, but what it is that they're pushing and trying to do is important, because these are the people that we elect into office. And you have to be careful with your choices, or you may elect yourself somebody that's going to take your rights right away from you. Let me bring up this, and it's not about politics today. That's not what this is about. But I want you to bear with me, because it's about what's going on with the internet, with our freedoms, okay? First quote I have by Ben Franklin, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. You will get neither. You know, you can give up certain rights supposedly for safety, but the safety never really increases. You just end up losing your rights. The same one here by Thomas Jefferson, I prefer dangerous freedom over a peaceful slavery. And so these are our founding fathers of the United States, and they were trying to make a pretty clear message that do not give up your liberties just because you feel it'll make you feel a little safer or things will be a little better for you, because they never turn out that way. Let me move on to our main stories here. So this is a post on Twitter. It's allowed. It's been up. It remains. It has not been shut down. And if you watch some of my other videos, I call it a little bit of a sanity test. If you were to switch a gender, if you were to switch a color of skin, is the statement still okay to say? If your answer is no, then it's not okay to say it the way it is now. This woman, I'm going to end up cropping out her Twitter stuff, because I do, and I'll end up editing this, because I don't want to out them. It's not my point. Anyway, she says in a tweet, you ever meet a man and it's so obvious that no one in his life has ever told him to shut the F up. Now, if we were to reverse that and say, you ever meet a woman and it's so, we got a problem. Why is it not a problem to say the same thing about a man? This is still allowed on Twitter. But if a man had said this on Twitter, he would have been removed. Someone would have reported him and his account would have been shut down. It has to go the same way. I do not like and I do not accept double standards. If you're going to say it's not okay to say it about a woman, which I agree with, then it's not okay to say it about a man. Period. End of statement. No more discussion. The reply to this tweet is from an internet guy. I almost said his name. So anyway, he said, Yes, I've met a white guy before. Yes. Let's change it. And I'm not going to read it out opposite because I don't want to be taken out of context. But again, switch. And instead of saying white guy, say, yes, I've met a black woman before. Oof, boy. We'd be seeing some accounts disappear real quick. But why is this okay? It's a double standard. And I did not get to choose to be bald. I didn't choose to be 5'7". I didn't choose to have, you know, red chin hair. And I didn't choose to be a white male. I was born this way. You are attacking people because of their gender and their race. Why is this okay? But it's not okay to do it to any other gender or race. We need to fix that. But you may say, you know what? I don't even use Twitter. I don't care what's on Twitter. Bunch of crazies on there. This doesn't affect me. Okay. Do you play video games at all? Do you enjoy video games? Do you enjoy gaming at all? Now, maybe you say no, but let's stay with me. This is a game. Ubisoft is coming out with Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Well, if you know about Valhalla, they were Vikings, which makes them my skin color. She says, friends, medieval, friends, medieval Twitter, I'm very worried having seen the trailer for this. It's going to be a white supreme person train wreck. Because it's about Nords? But you know what? Hey, okay, maybe you don't play video games. No big deal. But even the American Defamation League, I think, or Anti-Defamation League, says, well, Steam, the largest and most important online store for PC gamers, offers white superior persons a new outlet for their hateful rhetoric and calls for violence. More on Steam's role as a host for this dangerous ideology in our latest report. What? It's a video game platform. People upload their games, and yes, they have removed games that are a little too spicy, but here they are attacking video game players, which again are mostly male. But okay, maybe we're not all gamers, no big deal. That's all right, we'll just move on to, oh wait, the Washington Post. Now this is talking about our internet and our newspapers, where we get our news from. Well, we need that to be accurate. We can't have that telling salacious lies and being inaccurate. Or where are we going to get our news from? How are we going to know what's happening in the world? Well, the Washington Post says warm, humid weather could slow the bug, new research finds. Hey, that's great. That's awesome. So Trump reads this and says, hey, you know what? He showcases the idea that heat and humidity could help fight the bug. That's awesome. So he mentions it out loud. And the Washington Post reports on this as well. The White House on Thursday pitched, quote, emerging research on the benefits of sunlight and humidity in diminishing the threat of the bug as President Donald Trump encourages states to move to reopen their economies. Past studies have not found good evidence that the warmer temperatures and higher humidity of spring and summer will help tamp down the spread of the bug. But in the previous post they did, the research was just getting started. It's not done yet. So how are they saying that? So you've got the same person say, you know what might work? Wash your face every night. Okay, I'm going to wash my face every night. Hey, that guy over there is going to wash his face every night. That doesn't even work. Yeah, but you just said, nope. So now we have, and I'm using this one example. There's millions of examples, but here we have somebody that's a newspaper that's saying one thing. Then when it's supported by a group, they change their own support of it. So you can't trust the news anymore. Okay, well, gaming's out, social media's out, maybe the news is starting to come out. How about a college professor that is now being fired because he doesn't think like everybody else? Fired for his views, UNT math professor brings free speech lawsuit. In total defiance of the First Amendment, the University of North Texas has fired a math professor for criticizing the concept of microaggressions and for refusing to attend extra diversity training to correct his views, which the math department chair deemed not compatible with the values of this department. This is where we start getting into 1984 George Orwellian stuff. You know, George Orwell, if you were to hook up a generator to him, he'd be spinning in his grave so quick he could power a small city right now. Now, Professor Nathaniel Ayers is suing UNT for violating his free speech and due process rights. Ayers is represented by attorneys from the Alliance Defending Freedom. The right to express one's views, particularly in matters of politics, is at the absolute core of the First Amendment's protection of the right to free speech, as the Supreme Court wrote in Texas v. Johnson, the case in which it upheld flag burning as protected form of protest. If there is a bedrock principle underlying the First Amendment, it is the governments may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable. Yet that is exactly what UNT has done to Ayers. Imagine being a college professor saying, I've already taken your diversity training. I'm not going to take more that you are telling me to, because we disagree. You're not going to change my mind. This, I mean, if you haven't read 1984, George Orwell, this is what they talk about. We need to send him off for re-education. Send him off to a re-education camp. He doesn't think like everybody else. Hey, this is a big deal. This is college universities, which is teaching all our young people, which means if you walk into a college with free thought and thoughts of your own, and you just want to go there to learn math or do whatever, but the math professor or you don't agree with what the college's overall theme is or views on all of these issues, you're fired or you're removed as a student or whatever. So now our education is slipping along these paths. But let's say you don't game, and let's say you don't, you know, you don't worry about the news, and let's say you're done with college. Let's move on. Star Wars China poster sparks controversy after shrinking John Boyega's character. Now, John Boyega is the gentleman of color in this movie, and he's been shrunk and moved way to the back. So we're now changing and hurting minorities in these posters because China doesn't like that particular minority. So we've given up our principles for their principles for a couple of bucks, maybe a couple million or a couple billion bucks. But still, you, basically they're saying, hey, freedom is for sale. Freedom's for, we will give up our principles so we can make a dime from you. There's Disney for you. And Disney's got a lot more examples of bad actions. I'm just bringing this particular one to light. But most of, they found it was very expensive to make a movie for the American cinema experience and then re-editing it to go to view in China. So now they just edit it for China, and that's what we get to see here in the United States. That's the way this is going. As a matter of fact, they removed some kind of spicy love scenes by the character Rose in some of the Star Wars movies because of this. But let's say you're not a moviegoer. Let's go on. One more movie example, sorry. Climate experts call for dangerous Michael Moore film to be taken down. Planet of the Humans, which takes aim at the green movement, is full of misinformation. It says one online library. How is that official? A new Michael Moore produced documentary that takes aim at the supposed hypocrisy of the green movement is, quote, dangerous, misleading, and destructive, and should be removed from public viewing, according to an assortment of climate scientists and environmental campaigners. So now environmental campaigners, because this disagrees with their view, they want to strike the movie down to where you don't have the right to view it at all. But let's move on. DailyMail.com, Alaska school board bans 5 books, including The Great Gatsby, because they depict adult issues containing adult references. But some board members admit to not even having read the novels. Alaskan school board has banned 5 literary classics from high school. The school board has banned The Great Gatsby, Invisible Man, Catch-22, The Things They Carried, and I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Now, remember, one of these books is written by, I think, Maya Angelou? Let me look down through here and see if I can find it. Anyway, one of these books is written by a woman of color, and they're banning her book. Hey, if we're going to say, you know, bad things, what about silencing that? You know, these books are important because they used to be taught in not only lower grades, but high school, because they have adult situations in them and kids read this. And then you have a discussion about these problems and these issues and why this is bad, why this is good. And it allows for critical thinking. It allows you to determine, hey, here we have a situation where this is bad and this is also bad, but we have to choose one of them, or we have to understand both of them because we have to make a decision. And how do we analyze and how do we work through these problems? No, you cannot do that anymore. Just don't think about it. Just listen to what we say. Listen to what we teach you. Listen to what we spoon feed you. Books are gone. But let's say you're not an average reader. How about you just told an offensive joke? Now, what deems it to be offensive? Well, that's not for you to say. That's for the government to say. Offensive jokes logged in non-crime databases. And this is in Scotland. In the past 5 years, Police Scotland has logged more than 3,300, quote, bad incidents that involved no criminality. Hundreds of people in Scotland are being recorded on police databases every year for committing non-crimes, such as telling offensive jokes. Is it illegal? No. Okay, I'm going to do it then. But we're going to record who you are, and we're going to keep an eye on you, buddy, because you're not doing quite the way we want you to do it. And now on to the main article. Now, this is The Atlantic, and this is a major news outlet. And yes, it does lean politically to the left, but they have an ideas section where a writer from Harvard Law School professor and a writer, a professor of law at the University of Arizona College of Law. So here we have two law professors from very accredited colleges writing a story about why you should not have the First Amendment. Internet speech. Now, all of you use the internet because you're sitting here watching my video. As such, hey, this is stuff you guys need to know, because if the internet goes away and it gets boiled and policed down, there is no more communication between us. They may look at my channel and say, hey, you know what? This guy is speaking bad things, things that the establishment does not agree with. He needs to go away. Well, let's talk about this. Internet speech will never go back to normal. In the debate over freedom versus control of the global network, China was largely correct and the U.S. was wrong. Let me rephrase that for you. In the debate over freedom versus control of the global network, communism was largely correct and freedom of the First Amendment was wrong. These are two professors at a university at prestigious schools that are involved in law. They're supposed to protect our laws on the books, not try to rewrite them. And our First Amendment, the most important law we have, they're saying it's wrong. The bug has emboldened American tech platforms to emerge from their defensive crouch. Before the pandemic, they were targets of public outrage over the life under the dominion. Today, the platforms are proudly collaborating with one another and following government guidance to censor, I'm saying, quote, harmful information related to the bug. And they are using their prodigious data collection capacities in coordination with federal and state governments to improve contact tracing, bug enforcement, and other health measures. As Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg recently boasted, the world has faced pandemics before, but this time we have a new superpower, the ability to gather and share data for good. Do you know what one of the things they did with this? Right now we have a lot of people that are sick and a lot of people that are dying, and that is awful, and that is something that we would like to avoid at all costs. However, in America right now, we also have 30 million, as of this video, 30 million unemployed people. This is more people than the Great Depression of the 1920s. Food processing lines are falling apart. There's a real risk that you go to the grocery store and there is no food. Maybe not yet, but it could happen. A lot of our meat processing facilities have closed down because of the bug, and President Trump has had to force them to reopen using the current wartime laws that have been enacted. If he didn't, there would be a real risk that you go to the store and there's no food. I don't know about you. I do not have a cow in the backyard that I can zip open and make steaks out of. I do not have a garden. If food goes away, we have a very serious problem. But there was a protest by conservatives stepping up saying, hey, my small business is going under. I have 50 or 100 or 12 or 3 employees that depend on me paying them, and I depend on people buying my product. We need to reopen. They wanted to protest this shutdown. They were not allowed to. They were removed from Facebook because it doesn't go against the data for good. It goes against the data for good ideals. This is just plain up shutting up people because they disagree with what Facebook believes. Let's continue on. Civil rights groups are tolerating these measures. Emergency times call for emergency measures, but are also urging a swift return to normal when the virus ebbs. We need to make sure that when we've put it past this crisis, our country isn't transformed into a place we don't want to live, warns the American Civil Liberties Union's Jay Stanley. Any extraordinary measures used to manage a specific crisis must not become permanent fixtures in the landscape of government intrusions into daily life, declares the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a digital rights group. These real worries, since the foundation notes, life-saving programs such as these and their intrusions on digital liberties tend to outlive their urgency. Right, so they'll enact these during an emergency. The emergency goes away, but they keep those enactions in place. And we need to be worried about that. As surprising as it may sound, digital surveillance and speech control in the United States already show many similarities to one finds in an authoritarian state such as China. Constitutional and cultural differences mean that private sector rather than the federal and state governments currently takes the lead in these practices, which further values and addresses threats different from those in China. But the trend towards greater surveillance and speech control here and toward the growing involvement of government is undeniable and likely inexorable. In other words, it's not the government here in the United States that's deciding what is or is not okay for you to say online. It's the private companies. Twitter decides, I don't like you, you're gone. But YouTube might say, well, you're okay, you can still be here. Well, now you've only been silenced a little bit. But YouTube then may follow suit, which also follows suits with Google. And Google may say, you're a bad actor. You're off Google, you're off YouTube. Well, if you're off Facebook, you're also off Instagram, because they're all connected, you see. All of a sudden, you're not only silenced completely, but the only way you can go back in and see what's left is by making a new account with a new email and a new fake everything to try to pretend you're somebody else to go in and look at what's even being posted there. And what you do is if you have view A and view B, and the two are always talking and communicating and hashing out ideas, that's kind of a two-winged airplane. One balances out the other, one keeps things disagreeing with the other, and it keeps middle ground. It doesn't let you swing too far off in any one direction. But if you only have a one-winged airplane, that airplane is going to go crunching down to the ground because it's not balanced in both ways. What's happening is that one view, the conservative view, or now in many cases even a moderate view, is being silenced or removed or quieted, which only leaves one view. The other view isn't going to go away. You're not going to silence them. They're going to find someplace else to talk. Reddit, in politics, used to be the right and the left are going to talk. Now Reddit is, it's the left, because the right have been removed or downvoted, or we don't want you here anymore because your views oppose what the majority think. And so it's silenced. The minority is not going to go into the night quietly and meekly. They're going to find other ways to communicate. And what happens? Now you have the left in their bubble and the right in their bubble, and they're both talking amongst themselves and becoming boiling pots without ever interacting with each other and finding common ground that we can all live with. I don't know who originally said it, but the best middle ground for a decision is when both parties are unhappy. That really means that I didn't get what I want, they didn't get what they want, both of us are unhappy, but that means usually you found middle ground. Let's continue on. In the great debate of the past two decades about freedom versus control of the network, China was largely right and the United States was largely wrong. Significant monitoring and speech control are inevitable components of a mature and flourishing internet, and governments must play a large role in these practices to ensure the internet is compatible with society's norms and values. Do you know what was once normal? Having a person as your I have to watch my words because I don't want this video to get whacked, but having a person work for you without pay, and yes, they were a little bit darker in skin tone, that was normal 300 years ago, 200 years ago. So if we said, hey, society's norms and values are these, let's not change them, we wouldn't have had any changes that we had, which freed many people that were wrongly being not free. Okay, you follow what I'm saying here, right? If you said, hey, back in the 1950s, men worked and women stayed home, had babies, and did not work. And as such, the man was the provider for the family, and the women were wives, and they cooked and they stayed home. But women really didn't work, not in the 50s. Now, in the 60s and 70s, yes, they went to work more, but not so much in the 50s. Now, and if they did, it was kind of until they got married, and it was a very traditional role. Well, that was society's norm, and it was its value then. So let's not change that. Let's keep it just the way it is. Oh, wait, you're glad it changed? You're glad things came about to where things are different now? Well, that's because you had a new group come in and say, we do not like the society's norms. We need to change them. But if you silence those people, nothing changes. And the only reason you're into it, whoever writes this crap, is because you think it's going to go your way. Imagine if it doesn't go your way. Imagine if the web had entirely opposing views to you and they said, we're going to lock this down and you can't tell us your thoughts on this stuff. You'd be furious. Well, what do you think everybody that doesn't agree with you feels right now? For some reason, it's so short-sighted to say, well, my view is correct and yours is not, and so I'm only going to allow my view and not your view. Well, what do you think the opposing person says? Again, in our sanity test, let's reverse things. You say your view is right and mine's wrong, and so I can't speak anymore? Well, that's not fair. Okay, it's not fair. So you have to look at this from the other side. But these are lawyers. These are the academics. These are the smart people. You plebeians don't obviously know what you're talking about. So don't worry about that. We're going to discern and decide what's right for you. Don't think. That's basically all the stories that I've read today. Is you're bad, you're different, you're wrong. Stop thinking. And we're not going to allow you to talk anymore because you're different than what the main theme or the mainstream thinks. But all the ones that are talking and doing the writing, well, they only look at one side of the coin. They continue on. Beginning in the 1990s, the U.S. government and powerful young tech firms began promoting non-regulation and American-style freedom of speech as essential features of the internet. This approach assumed that authoritarian states would crumble in the face of digital networks that seemed to have American constitutional values built into them. The internet was a vehicle for spreading U.S. civil and political values. More speech would mean better speech platforms, which in turn would lead to democratic revolutions around the world. I don't think they went that far. I think they were looking at, hey, I can put this place out where people can talk and I'll make money. But when the money comes from China and when the money comes from places that want you to quiet, you should shush, no freedom for you. Well, the money speaks. And so now they're shushing. China quickly became worried about unregulated digital speech, both as a threat to the Communist Party's control and to the domestic social order more generally. It began building even more powerful mechanisms of surveillance and control to meet these threats. Other authoritarian nations would follow China's lead. In 2009, China, Russia, and other members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization announced their agreement on cooperation in the field of international information security. The agreement precisely warned of a coming information war in which internet platforms would be weaponized in ways that would threaten nations' social and political systems. Hey, if China doesn't like it, China doesn't need our internet. They don't need Google. They can do their own thing. But there's no money in it for Google. There's no money in it for Facebook. So now they say, hey, there's a billion people in China, and we love that Chinese money. So we're going to go ahead, and we're just going to edit it across the board for even the Americans. During the George W. Bush and Obama administrations, the United States helped secure digital freedoms for people living in authoritarian states. It gave them resources to support encryption and filter evasion products that were designed to assist individuals in circumventing politically motivated censorship. As then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton put in 2010, and it openly assisted Twitter and other U.S. tech platforms that seemed to be fueling the Arab Spring. Now, one of the ways we get all this information from China and from other countries coming out of it to the United States, and so that we know kind of what's going on, is China makes a lot of firewalls, so news can't go out unless it's viewed by the government. A lot of people use VPNs or virtual private networks so they can tunnel out and get this information out there. The way that they're talking now is that a VPN will always exist because of the way it works. The encryption does protect the data. So how do you circumvent that? Well, the way that they're talking about is just not allowing any of the bad speech on the platform to begin with. In other words, if I say, freedom is awesome, I love freedom, America number one, and I can put that through a VPN tunnel and someone in China can view it, the way that you stop that from happening is not, you can't stop it once it's in the VPN. again, because that you can mask your IPN or your IP address and it can pretend to be coming from anywhere. The way you stop that is by not allowing me to say, hey, America is great, I love freedom, and getting that out in the first. So as soon as I say that, they cut it off. It's gone. Now you don't have to worry about it accidentally getting out because the message doesn't exist. It's removed by the platform itself. In these and so many other ways, the public internet in its first two decades seemed good for open societies and bad for closed ones. But this conventional wisdom turned out to be mostly backwards, they say. China and other authoritarian states become adept at reverse engineering internet architecture to enhance official control over digital networks in their countries and thus over their populations. And in recent years, the American public has grown fearful of ubiquitous digital monitoring and has been reeling from disruptive social effects of digital networks. Two events were wake-up calls. The first was Edward Snowden's revelations in 2013 about the astonishing extent of secret U.S. government monitoring of digital networks at home and abroad. The U.S. government's domestic surveillance is legally constrained, especially compared with what authoritarian states do. But this is much less true of private sectors. Snowden's documents gave us a glimpse of the scale of surveillance of our lives by U.S. tech platforms and made plain how government accessed privately collected data to serve its national security needs. Let me just continue through this. I'll power through this and then we'll talk about it. The second wake-up call was Russia's interference in the 2016 election. As Barack Obama noted, the most consequential misinformation campaign in modern history was not particularly sophisticated. This was not some elaborate, complicated espionage theme. Russia used simple phishing attack and blunt and relatively limited social media strategy to disrupt the legitimacy of the 2016 election and wreak still ongoing havoc on the American political system. Let me pause you there. They've done studies on this. They think at most, a few hundred thousand people may have been swayed by this information. That's at most. Secondly, again, you notice that both of these situations that they're talking about were a Democratic lead being harmed by someone coming out stating something against it. Why aren't they saying anything about the misinformation that Ukraine supposedly has put out against Donald Trump? Why isn't that mentioned in here? Well, because it fits only one political narrative. Now, I'm not saying you necessarily you have to be on one side or the other, but when you're only pushing and saying, hey, this is wrong, look what it did to side A. This is also wrong, look what it did to side A. Yeah, but we need the inverse. What happens when something's bad against side B? Oh, shoo, don't worry about that. We're only talking about side A. This is where this is going. And so all the information that you're allowed to get is only going to be one-sided. As such, you're not going to have the ability to be open-minded and to think about both sides and understand that critical thinking. Go back to where I was talking about the Alaskans removing books about critical thinking. We need to be able to see both sides and make an assessment and a judgment on our own as to what is or is not the view that we want to choose. To remove one side and say it is negative or it is not the theme and it's not what society deems relevant at the moment, we would never have any change. And most of the change that I'm talking about has been very positive because minorities and women are now better represented because we were allowed those changes. You talk about, you know, the old white guy is a bad because all his laws were this way. Well, guess who it is that came in and enacted these laws that allowed women to vote? Guess who it is whose laws that it was that were pushed through the government that allowed the black man to become free? These were the laws of the old white guys. So to say that their ideas are wrong, well, that's where our freedoms came from or from our founding fathers. There were no women in government. There were no minorities in government then. So these laws that helped everybody today were from the same people they're telling you now were bad people. This doesn't make sense. And so when you shut off one valve of the world's views, you're stifling everything. And you're only allowing one message to get out. And that doesn't allow for freedom. It doesn't allow for exchanges of ideas. It doesn't allow for critical thinking. And we have to keep that open at all costs. I'm not going to read the rest of that because it just starts getting into laws, but it says these constitutional limits help explain why, since the Russian electoral interference, digital platforms has taken the lead in combating all manner of unwanted speech on their networks, and if anything, have increased their surveillance of our lives. But the government has been in the shadows of these developments, nudging them along and exploiting them when they can. Here's the thing. If I were to post something that was negative of a different person, a different class of person, my views would be removed. And you know what? Okay, let's even say rightfully so. If something I say is bad about another group of people, I should be removed. But then why is it, as I showed in the first couple graphics, why is it, oh, other people can say something bad about me and their views are not removed? It's a double standard. You can see it's starting to only go one direction. That, I do not like double standards. That is not freedom of thought or freedom of speech or ideas. You're filtering it down to where it's thought crime. It's thought police. Again, read 1984. 10 years ago, speech on the American internet was a free-for-all. There was relatively little monitoring and censorship, public or private, of what people posted, said, or did on Facebook, YouTube, and other sites. In part, this was due to the legal community that platforms enjoyed under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, and in part was because the socially disruptive effects of digital networks, various forms of weaponized speech, and misinformation had not yet emerged. As the networks become filled with bullying, bad actions, bad action, bad action, bad action. I'll put the link below if you want to read all this. Digitally manipulated videos and other forms of harmful content. Private platforms face growing pressure from governments and users to fix the problems. Okay, so how did we fix this? Memes of Joe Biden are being removed from Facebook as inaccurate content. They're being removed from Twitter as inaccurate content. These are just memes. And in some cases, those accounts are either banned, removed, or temporarily suspended. However, a meme of President Trump goes out, no problems. Again, I'm not saying you have to like Trump. I'm not saying you have to like Joe Biden. But you have to do equality, equal. If you can put a message out that makes fun of Trump and it stays, then messages making fun of Biden have to stay. And vice versa. You can't only allow one side of the coin. You have a one-winged airplane, it's going to crash. This does not work. And you're going to close off everybody and they're going to find a quiet place in the corner to continue their discussions. You can't just shut people up. It doesn't work that way. The problem with this, the Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is there is a publisher and there is a platform. YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, they claim to be platforms. A platform is allowed to say, I am not representing anyone that publishes information on this platform. I am just a way that they can speak their message. As such, I cannot be held legally responsible for anything that they say on here. So in other words, if I say something that's really terrible and someone decides to go against me for saying that, they can't also go against YouTube and say, hey, you allowed this. The platform gives YouTube the freedom to say, no, we're just a platform or a place where other people publish their ideas. They have to pay the consequences for their own speech. Fair enough. Platform is what all of these were supposed to be, and this is where this law came into play. Now, a newspaper or other news article or news agency, they are a publisher. They edit. They decide what does and does not get put out for viewing. As such, they are responsible for everything that they put forth. And if they put forth something that is a lie or incriminating, they can be held legally responsible as such. The problem is these platforms are now editing the information that they give forward. In other words, they are publishing on a platform. But so they're saying, if I say something or someone else says something that they disagree with, they're going to silence it because it's bad, you see. But if it's bad and they're the ones that are deciding it's bad, then they are a publisher, not a platform. And if this is the case, then they should be held accountable for what's remaining on their page. But they say, no, we're immune from that. So we can't be held responsible for what's shown, but we are going to remove what is put on there if we disagree with it. Now they're a platform that is publishing, and that is not allowed under Section 230. They need to go back to being a platform and allowing everybody to speak, or they need to come out with their new YouTube or new Google or new Twitter or new Facebook terms of service that say, if you say anything that supports this or this view or this, we will remove you. That's okay too. But then you're a publisher. Then if you allow something to go through, you have to be held legally responsible for it. To continue on, let's see here. The result a decade later is, I think I read that spot already, but let me, the result a decade later is that most of our online speech now occurs in closely monitored playpens, where many tens of thousands of human censors review flag content to ensure compliance with ever lengthier and more detailed community standards or some equivalent. More and more, this human monitoring and censorship is supported or replaced by sophisticated computer algorithms. The firms use these tools to define acceptable forms of speech and other content on their platforms, which in turn sets the effective boundaries for a great deal of speech in the U.S. public forum. That's why many of us YouTubers have to use creative words to circumvent that. After the 2016, and this video may get hit, I don't know. After the 2016 election debacle, for example, the tech platforms took aggressive but still imperfect steps to fend off foreign adversaries. YouTube has aggressive policy of removing what it deems to be deceptive practices and foreign influence operations related to elections. It also makes judgments about and gives priority to what it calls authoritative voices. Facebook has deployed a multi-pronged strategy that includes removing fake accounts and eliminating or demoting inauthentic behavior. Twitter has a similar censorship policy aimed at platform manipulation originating from bad faith actors located in countries outside of the U.S. These platforms have engaged in strategic collaboration with the federal government, included by sharing information to fight foreign electoral interference. So, a meme against Donald Trump, no problems. A meme against Joe Biden, that is foreign interference. These are bots. These are bad actors. Why? What's the proof? Well, because we say it is. We've deemed that these are, they're robots. Oh, you have to listen to it. What are our guidelines based on this? We're not going to tell you. We're not going to have that publicly available. We're not going to have any information so you know why we chose to silence you. We're just going to do it. And we're just going to say because of certain actions. What are those certain actions? Well, I don't know. You're just going to have to figure that out now, aren't you? The platforms are also cooperating with one another and with international organizations and sometimes law enforcement on other censorship practices. This collaboration began with a technology that allows child stuff to be assigned a digital fingerprint and placed in centralized databases that platforms draw on to suppress the material. A similar mechanism has been deployed against bad speech, like bad foreign people that would come to hurt you speech. And a more controversial practice since the label, I can't read that, often involves inescapably political judgments. In other words, somebody that has a different opposing view, perhaps from a different country or a different religion, comes in and does bad things to your country. Sharing and coordination across platforms are also moving forward on content related to electoral interference and are being discussed for the manipulated videos known as deepfakes. The danger with content cartels, as the writer Evan Dweck dubs these collaborations, is that they diminish accountability for censorship decisions and make invariable mistakes more pervasive and harder to fix. See, here's the thing, is that if I say I have view A, this person has view B, and I'm the one that puts the content forth, I can say, someone else says, hey, I agree with A. Okay, here you go, everybody. Check that out. I agree with A. Here you go, everybody. Check that out. I agree with B. Hold on. Let me look at this. This is deceptive. Well, I agree with B. Hold on. That's a deep fake. Yeah, but I agree. Nope, that's a meme and that's not accurate and this is deceptively edited. Yeah, but you have to understand this is how this goes. I agree with A. Oh, okay, here you go. Oh, but wait, that's deceptively edited. No. We looked at this. Our internal review boards looked at this. This is acceptable. But it's the same as, hush. That's where we're going, right? This is where this is all going. And so you're only getting one side of things. Now, these tech companies are all in big cities. They are all have left. I'm a libertarian. I'm kind of like right down the middle of the board. When you do the you know, socialism, authoritarianism, left, right, all that, I'm almost a dot dead in the center. I think I'm a couple ticks down towards libertarianism. But as far as left and right, I'm dead center. But I believe in freedom. If you want to do something stupid, that it's your right to do it. You know, when I was in Iceland and you go up to these massive waterfalls, there are no safety anything. There are no warning signs. They've kept the landscape pristine and beautiful. And if my dummy self wants to walk up and step in water, it's too deep, and I'm thrown off a 300-foot waterfall, hey, it's your freedom, man. You are as free as you want to be stupid. And that's the end of Joker. You go to Niagara Falls, warning signs, fences everywhere, protecting all the stupid people. Look, when you water this down and you only get one view out there, you know, the reason why I say all this is because these views, these big corporations, Twitters, Facebooks, Googles, etc., they're all in big cities that are very left-leaning. So their view is what they think is best for the country. But the view of somebody that is in an urban area, okay, where there are lots of police and grocery stores, 5-minute walk down the road, and public transportation, is not going to be the same as a view of a farmer in a rural area in the country when there's a problem and the police are 40 minutes away and he has to drive, you know, 30 minutes to the closest store and stock up on food for 3 months instead of going walking 5 minutes to get. Those are vastly different people. But what you're saying is, hey, you should agree with us in the big cities. You should have our views. This is proper, smart, ivory tower society. But that's not how the rest of the world sees things. So when you force people to only have one view of the world, it's not going to work, but they're trying to force it in. And if they succeed, the internet is done. They will have to create a second river of information that people can tap into, because I'll tell you, people are not going to go away. They do not silently go into the night just because they lost the battle on information sharing. So they continue on. And of course, mistakes are inevitable. Much of the content that the platforms censor, for example, again, bad things, content that violates intellectual property rights, is relatively easy to identify and uncontroversial to remove. But Facebook, for example, also takes down any speech that they've deemed as hateful, certain propaganda, cruel and insensitive speech, and bullying speech, which are harder to identify objectively and more controversial to regulate or remove. Facebook publishes data on its enforcement of its rules. They show that the firm makes mistakes defined by its own flexible criteria. And about 15% of the applied cases involving supposed bad actions, and about 10% of the applied bad speech cases. And all, but in those 15% and 10%, they always unerringly go one direction. They never make a mistake on the other side. It's only one-sided. Odd how that happens, isn't it? All these developments have taken place under pressure from Washington and Brussels in hearings over the past few years. Congress has criticized the companies, not always in consistent ways, for allowing harmful speech. In 2018, Congress amended the previously untouchable Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act to subject the platforms to the same liability that non-digital outlets face for enabling bad things. Additional amendments to Section 230 are now in the offing, as various other threats to regulate digital speech. In 2019, Mark Zuckerberg invited the government to regulate, quote, harmful content on his platform. In a speech 7 months later defending America's First Amendment values, he boasted about his team of thousands of people and artificial intelligence systems that monitors for fake accounts. Even Zuckerberg's defiant ideal of free expression is an extensively policed space. Against this background, the tech firm's downgrading and outright censorship of speech related to the bug are not large steps. That's why I have to say the bug, though. Facebook is using computer algorithms more aggressively, mainly because concerns about the privacy of users prevent human censors from working on these issues from home during forced isolation. As it has done with Russian information, Facebook will notify users when articles they have liked are later deemed to have included health-related misinformation. As a matter of fact, you cannot even share these articles privately by Facebook Messenger. If you are not pushing this to the public, but instead try to send an article to a friend or a family member in Facebook Messenger, those can also be deemed as not able to be sent. So it's not even you talking to the public, it is you trying to privately message a friend. That's right, Facebook is editing and monitoring your private messages. It is why I left Facebook years ago. But the basic approach to identifying and readdressing speech judged to be misinformation or to present an imminent risk of physical harm hasn't changed, according to Monica Bricker, Facebook's head of global policy management. As in other contexts, Facebook relies on fact-checking organization and authorities, in quotes, from the World Health Organization to the government of the United States to ascertain which content to downgrade or remove. Now, the other authorities, just so you guys know, are other news outlets. They've chosen, hey, we're going to go to some of these other news outlets and organizations like the ACLU, like the Southern Poverty Law Center, like CNN. They all seem to be very left-leaning. But these are the authorities that they've decided to let them monitor what is and is not allowable. Gee, I wonder if that could have any backfire and only go one way. Shocking. What is different about speech regulation related to the bug is the context. The problem is huge and stakes are very high, but when the crisis is gone, there is no unregulated normal to return to. We live, and for several years we have been living, in a world of serious and growing harms resulting from digital speech. Governments will not stop worrying about these harms, and private platforms will continue to expand their definition of offensive content and will use algorithms to regulate it even more closely. The general trend toward more speech control will not abate. Over the past decade, network surveillance has grown in roughly the same portion as speech control. Indeed, on many platforms, ubiquitous surveillance is prerequisite to speech control. The public has been told over and over that hundreds of computers we interact with daily, smartphones, laptops, desktops, automotives, camera, audio recorders, payment mechanisms, and more, collect, emit, and analyze data about us that are, in turn, packaged and exploited in various ways to influence and control our lives. We have also learned a lot, but surely not the whole picture, about the data extent which the government exploit on this gargantuan pool of data. Now, this continues on for about as much as I've read, believe it or not. I'm going to stop here because I'm coming way long at an hour, but I know some of you like longer content that makes you think a little bit deeper about a subject. I'm going to leave the link down below. You can continue to read this, but what it boils down to is the government is taking the step of, we're not going to interfere with what the private platforms are doing. The private platforms, as such, are saying, we're going to silence people that we disagree with or that we call bad actors. Now, those bad actors are being decided upon who is and is not the bad actor based on the views of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google, etc. So that being said, where are we going to go for social media? Where are we going to go to share our ideas? There may be a day where a video or a channel like mine is just gone. It's Thanos, because my views do not agree with those at large. If that happens, there is nothing I can do. I am too small a creator. Now, yes, I can find other platforms to go upon, but those are not nearly as popular. They're not nearly as well known of. And like I said, what that does is it forces people that disagree with the tech giants to find new platforms, and you end up splitting everybody into two thought pools, the left pool, the right pool, this pool, that pool. And you're not going to get the sharing of ideas anymore. And as such, we're going to come to a point where these two sides may have such strong disagreements that they come to very aggressive measures to try to correct these issues. Guys, part of being a wise person and an adult is knowing what is going on in your world and what is possibly going to happen to your speech, your views, your laws, and everything like that. You know, we talk about a lot of funny stories here and a lot of bad actions that happen. But this content that I put out today, this is the most serious stuff that I talk about. This is the real problem that we face. Because as men, especially if you're a man of my skin tone, we are at the bottom of the barrel now, the way society talks. You're a man, hush. We don't want to hear from you. You are white. You've had all the advantages of the world. Hush. We don't want to hear from you. You are this. You are that. And all of a sudden, now I am going to be at the bottom rung. I thought when we talked about equality, everybody was supposed to have equal. Everybody's supposed to have the same voice, the same thoughts, the same ideas on a subject. But now we're getting to the point where it's like, well, you can't have thoughts about that because you're not part of that group. You can't have thoughts on what you feel about this or that because you're not part of that community. And as such, it removes all of our freedoms. It removes all of our ability to speak on anything that's not in our little pool of people. Well, that's not how you move forward. That's not progressive. That's not how you better the world. It's, in matter of fact, a way to lock down things just the way they are now. And the only way they get to change is if the powers that be deem them to be acceptable and that is the way that they want them to go. You know, we joke more and more and more about 1984 and George Orwell, but, you know, the thought crime and the word crime and the thought police, it's becoming a real thing. And of all the stories that I've read today and pointed out, if you disagree with what the narrative that these companies are trying to put forth and these certain political parties are trying to put forth, they will silence you. They will remove you and they will shut you up. The question is, you have two choices. You either vote to put somebody in office if you have the ability to vote. If you're in other countries where you don't have the ability to vote, there's not much I can do for you. But the big thing here for the United States, since so many of these tech companies are in the United States, is we have to keep the level at its highest freedoms here in the United States. Then if they get segmented down in other countries, there's nothing we can do about that. But if you segment them down here in the United States, but your country is up here, well, you're only going to get the filtered view. We've got to fight back against censorship, against silencing, against removing opposing views, no matter what view you have. I don't care who you are, and if you disagree with me politically or on any other topic, I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death the right for you to say it. And that is how we better as a society, by having opposing views. So stay alert, guys, because this is going to affect many of you. I may be, you know, I may be off the internet and into the woods in a cabin hunting bear and living off the land here before long if it keeps up at this point. But be aware of what's going on and make sure that you take whatever measures you can to correct this. Guys, if you'd like to support my work, links are below. As always, if you have supported me directly, I thank you very much. It means everything to me. That is what my current income is as I work on my bus. For the rest of you, you can like, comment, share, subscribe, and make sure to share my work. Not all my videos will be this long. If you've hung in here this long with me, thank you very much. But every once in a while, I have a deep topic that I do want to talk about. Guys, I'll leave it there. This is Better Bachelor. I'm Joker. Remember, if you don't correct the problem now, pretty soon you won't have the freedom to try to correct it later. Thank you.